for the Committee on Early Childhood Learning Finance. We'd like to go ahead and start with House File 2185. Representative Lanning, if we can start, we're hoping that a member will come in during the process. So we appreciate your patience today, and welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and members. We're pleased to be able to present to you today House File 2185. We do have a minor amendment that we would like to have you consider once you have a quorum in order to be able to take that. What this legislation is all about is an attempt to try and help more communities throughout Minnesota establish healthy community initiatives. My community first got involved with the Search Institute back in the mid-1990s. And set up a healthy community initiative that has had a very profound effect on our community. We were the first or second community in Minnesota to set up an initiative. There are currently about 25 communities throughout Minnesota that have these initiatives. And given the experience that we've had, we thought that it would be good if the state of Minnesota gave some encouragement and support for more communities to be able to set up initiatives like what we have found to be successful in Moorhead. And so what the bill does is it says that the Commissioner of Education should set up a process for collecting proposals from communities throughout Minnesota to be able to set up a healthy community initiative and at least five new initiatives, and then to also be able to invite at least four of the existing initiatives to be able to bring forward a proposal to enhance or strengthen the initiative that they've had operating in their community. The appropriation is for $250,000 for the last year of the biennium. Let me just add a couple more things from our experience. In all my years of public service in our community, I've never seen an initiative garner as much interest and support on the part of the community as has the Healthy Community Initiative. We did a survey here a couple years ago, and we know something about name recognition as politicians, and 80% of the people in our community were familiar with this initiative and the work of the initiative in the community. That is very significant, I think, when it comes to a grassroots organization like ours. We have seen in our community juvenile crime be cut in half as a result of the work of our initiative, and we've also seen a significant decrease in the numbers of our students in 6th, 12th, and 9th grade in at-risk behaviors that they have engaged. And here to explain more about this model, this we think very significant and very important support for our youth, is Dr. Peter Benson, the CEO of the Search Institute, who will explain more about what this is all about.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Lanning, and thank you, committee members, for these few moments to talk about this initiative called Healthy Communities, Healthy Youth. There are many initiatives for youth in America, and most of them are designed around naming the problems that young people have and trying to reduce those problems. That's the deficit approach and the risk reduction approach, very important, but it's only half of the story of how you grow successful young people. The other half of the story is how well communities embed in the very DNA of their community the capacity to promote the nutrients of development that every young person needs to succeed. So there's a big difference between promoting strength and preventing problems. They are both important, but they are not the same thing. Some of you may know that Search Institute, the place I lead here in Minneapolis, pioneered the language and the theory of 40 developmental assets, first premiered that work in 1990. It's a science-based roadmap for naming all of the good things that are universally important for America's kids. Great support systems after school, intergenerational relationships, neighborhoods that know your name, schools that are warm and encouraging and know the spark of each young person. The 40 developmental assets are critical. They're widely known to matter deeply and profoundly, not only for reducing risk behavior, but maybe in this context, most importantly, for promoting academic achievement. You have, I think, in your materials today, a very significant report that we wrote a few years ago called Boosting Student Achievement, New Research on the Power of Developmental Assets. And the point of the research, not only by us at Search Institute, but by scholars in California and in Massachusetts, is that the more of the developmental assets a young person has, by far the more likely they are to succeed in school and to stay in school. It's a very important academic achievement strategy, then, to build developmental assets. One of the issues in Minnesota, as it is in the nation, is that the typical young person that we're raising has only a minority of these developmental assets. So you ask, where do developmental assets come from? Well, schools alone can't be the generator of them. And so the developmental assets really require a community initiative where multiple sectors join hands and find their power to build relationships, to build connectedness, to build a sense of belonging. It's the stuff we all know in our hearts, but the science shows is, in fact, dramatically important. And every town and city has got great capacity to promote developmental assets, but it's just that most communities are now sleeping giants, and they need to be awakened. Representative Lanning described the second initiative in Moorhead. The first was in St. Louis Park. It's compelling to me that the sponsor of the Senate bill is Ron Latz from St. Louis Park, who has himself seen in his own school district, his own backyard, his own community, the power of a community-wide initiative to build developmental assets. There are hundreds of these asset-building initiatives in America. A disproportionate number of them are here in Minnesota. There are at least 25 multi-sector initiatives alive and well here, probably another 60 cities who have brought the asset model into at least one sector. But it really gets more powerful when the asset model begins to touch and build bridges across multiple sectors. And so to reiterate, what the goal of this Bill 2185 is to strengthen the network that is already here. That is to find and identify through an RFP process five more communities ready to fly with a community-wide initiative to build strength among their young, and then through an RFP process to find four of the existing initiatives and help them grow and build greater strength. But a third very important purpose of this bill is to connect all of the initiatives in Minnesota in a learning network to provide opportunities in each of the regions of the state for healthy community, healthy youth initiative leaders to come together and teach each other about the transformation of family services, of neighborhood, of after-school youth programs, and of schools itself. We think that that is a very important feature of this. There are some other states that are a bit ahead of us in supporting the growth, the development, and the renewal of healthy community, healthy youth initiatives. New York State now has an initiative called Assets Coming Together, or ACT, that provides funding and support and technical assistance to support asset building initiatives in the state of New York. In the state of Maine, the governor has actually created a cabinet-level position, the Children's Cabinet, that's responsible for moving forward the asset building work in many towns and cities in the state of Maine. And in California, the State Department of Education now mandates that all school districts and their leaders must be trained in the developmental assets and the importance of human relationship in promoting academic achievement. In our view, building the developmental strengths of young people and mobilizing communities to build those strengths is an absolutely essential strategy for growing strong and thriving and achieving youth. The work is underway in Minnesota. It is rich in some communities, but as an analog to everything else we do to promote academic achievement, this deserves its place as one of the key strategies for moving achievement forward.
Good. Thank you. Members, what I think we'll do is get the bill in the shape we need to and Representative Lanning, and then we'll see if there's any questions. Representative Bly, would you like to move House File 2185?
So moved. And is it going to the omnibus?
It'd be laid over for possible inclusion.
Yeah. I would move the bill and that it be laid over for possible inclusion in the early childhood omnibus bill.
Okay. Representative Bly moves that House File 2185 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus early childhood learning finance bill. And then we would like to move the author's amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, the A1 amendment came as a result of our discussion in the E12 committee. That committee suggested we rework the language with regard to making it a contractor as opposed to specifically mentioning the Search Institute. And so we have reworked that language following the discussion of the E12 committee.
May I have a motion to put the bill in the form that the author wants? Representative Fritz?
No,
okay. Representative Fritz offers an author's amendment to House File 2185, the A1 amendment. Does everybody have the amendment? Any discussion? Okay. Hearing none, those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. Okay, we've already heard the bill now, so we're ready for quorum. So are there any questions on the bill? Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you, it talks about assets. Could you explain what those are?
Sure.
Mr. Benson.
And if I will explain what they are, but there should be a document also. You just picked it up, in which the 40 assets are listed in there. So the 40 assets are building blocks of positive development. Sometimes we call them more poetically the nutrients of development, and they're around the concepts of support, empowerment, structure, and boundaries, the engagement in positive time use, the nurture of educational and learning commitment, the building of strong value and strong competency, and the nurture of positive identity. Each of those 40 has a very strong science base behind it, but until we did the work, nobody had pulled all of this science together into kind of a script for a community on what all kids need to succeed. And so you'll see in the list, having deep relationships with adults that last longer than a year, positive family communication, caring neighborhoods. The seventh asset is particularly interesting and important, living in a community where young people feel that the community actually values you. That perception is a really important asset, but it's also one of the least common assets in America. One of the assets you'll see is 17, 18, or 19 is the engagement 3 hours a week or more in the creative life. Painting, sculpting, dancing, writing, music, that's the least common of the 40 assets in the United States and the least common in the state of Minnesota. The percentage of kids who now experience that asset is probably about 20%. So one of the things we do, Representative, is, and we've done this now in 3,000 American cities, is to give communities a portrait of how well they are building the developmental assets. And what's powerful about that is when community leaders look at their asset profile, it becomes so obvious that the work of building the assets is vested in every sector of the community. Rotary's got a role, police has got a role, after school programs have got a role, families have a huge role, congregations have a role, and oh, by the way, schools have a role. And we like to say it that way, try to even argue that schools ought to be about a fifth of the energy for building assets. The other four-fifths should be in the rest of the community. Just doesn't work out that way. So the call to action, the awakening in towns and cities of people and sectors to be on the team matters dramatically for academic achievement, for the reduction of alcohol, tobacco, and other drug use, for the reduction of violence.
Thank you. Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It sounds like you take the village, I guess. But how do you get the village to cooperate?
Yeah.
One of the pictures you could create of this is about mobilizing the village. What the asset model actually is also is a restatement of the common good. So one of the reasons we built it, not only as a roadmap for healthy development, was to also name the 40 assets so that any breathing human being in Detroit or Moorhead or St. Louis Park or Duluth would say, yeah, I want my kids to experience these 40 ingredients too. So there becomes an awakening in communities that we may not agree on a lot of things, like politics and theology, but we ought to be a city that works together to boost these developmental strengths in our kids. And so it is not only a scientific language of health, it's also a language of shared vision and the common good. So it is in part about reconnecting the parts of the village to be on the same team, and that's a terribly critical piece of the work.
Thank you. I just want to say, from my perspective, I think it's a really intriguing idea in terms of what assets have to offer, and the idea of, you know, in our education committees, we most of the time we're dealing with bureaucracy and regulating kids and testing kids, and the idea of really supporting kids and helping them build their lives and build communities is very intriguing. So with that, members, Representative Bly renews his motion that House File 2185 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill. Any last comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just the last comment would be, as you and I, Madam Chair, have served on the Poverty Commission, the Commission to End Poverty by 2020, I've become more and more convinced that one of the best things we could do for children living in poverty is to be about the business of building assets. Way too many of our children living in poverty do not have the number and level of assets that they're going to need to be able to help live a life, the kind of life that we would want them to live. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, and then members, we are going to need to approve the minutes. Sure. Representative Lane, have you had a chance to look at the minutes? I see you're chewing something. Okay. Representative Lane has a motion to approve the minutes for March 4th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Motion prevailed, and the minutes are approved. Next, we are going to have Representative Peterson's bill. Representative Peterson, House File 3290. And then we're going to go to House File 2984 after that. And so we're switching the third and the fourth, and last we'll do House File 3246. I think we're supposed to, are we supposed to be on the floor at 5:30 or 6 o'clock? 6 o'clock, okay. So we may be able to finish before then, but obviously we need to be done at the latest, maybe 10 till or quarter till 6. I know some of you have bills up in other committees. I know Representative Peterson does as well, so we want to get her started here.
Okay.
Representative Peterson, do you want to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I would move House File 3290 for what?
For inclusion in the early childhood learning omnibus.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Peterson moves House File 3290 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus early childhood learning finance bill. Representative Peterson, if you could tell us about your bill.
I certainly will. You know, the Early Childhood Committee had the opportunity to travel around the state this past summer and fall, and it was really enlightening because we heard from parents and community members about their desire to help their children in school and to also know how well their children were doing in the schools. And I was particularly impressed in communities where there was a lot of collaboration and partnerships happening. In fact, happening in places where we hadn't anticipated such activity. And they were trying to bridge the gap between early childhood programs and the K-12 system, and it was certainly with the goal of improving school readiness for their children. And that really is an important goal for what we found in many of our communities, that they really do want their children to be prepared for school. And with limited resources in many instances, these communities are entering their data for kindergartners, and they're trying to bring people together and provide meaningful kindergarten transition strategies. And for those of you who have worked with the preschool and the kindergarten, you know that there are strategies that the parents need to know about, the teachers need to communicate, and that has to happen. And we found that happening more often than we had anticipated. House File 3290 responds to this need and helps build on the work already happening around Minnesota. First of all, this bill will help assist communities in determining how well their children are prepared for kindergarten by offering resources to school districts that want to do research-based assessments. And this builds on several years of school readiness studies that the Department of Education has done. Second, it will mobilize communities to improve the school readiness of their young children by assisting communities in the development and implementation of collaborative kindergarten transition strategies. These investments go a long way toward providing a vital link between the early childhood and the K-12 years. And when we know more about how our children are doing, we can do more. We can do more to help our children do better. And I will now turn it over to Todd Otis to talk about the proposal before you. And for those of you who don't know, he's from Ready for K, and I know you've seen him at committee hearings before because he's a strong advocate for our young children.
Representative Peterson, I do understand you have an amendment, H3290A1. I think we'd like to go ahead and move that and get your bill in the shape it's needed.
Okay. Thank you.
Would you like to move that?
I would like to move it.
Okay. Representative Peterson moves H3290A1 to put the bill in the form that it is needed. Does everybody have the amendment? And is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Representative Peterson, thanks for presenting your bill. The amendment is adopted. And Mr. Otis, if you'd like to proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the chance to be here, and thank you, Representative Peterson, for this bill. Just a few comments about the history. The school readiness assessment first came out in 2002. Governor Pawlenty, in his early year, was the responsible party for helping the state get a baseline for how ready for kindergarten our kids are. So based on the work sampling system, which is an assessment tool that kindergarten teachers are trained to use, observing how ready for kindergarten children are in five domains of child development, they rank kids either not yet or in process or proficient. So when you hear Ready for K and other organizations supporting early childhood saying that fewer than half the kids are fully prepared, we're using that as our tool. It's not just rhetoric, but it's fewer than half or about half now are in the proficient column. We think that Minnesota is one of several states that use this kind of school readiness assessment. but it's really a valuable baseline. It's a way of telling how to keep score in terms of whether we're improving or not in terms of school readiness. And one of the huge challenges we have as a system for children first to 21 is how to make the two worlds communicate or enable there to be better communication between early childhood and the K-12 system. Representative Peterson's bill goes a long way to helping assure that kind of linkage by offering school districts the opportunity to do the kind of school readiness assessment that the state has done on a statistically valid sampling basis, but hopefully to do it such that in a number of years we'll get to a point where all children have the benefit of this kind of assessment. It's really important because when we reach that point, we'll be at a place where the people who are taking care of the kids, whether it's parents or providers, will have more and more clear understanding of what it takes to get those children ready for K. And so the kindergarten readiness assessment tool itself is strategically really valuable. It'll help the dialogue between kindergarten teachers and elementary principals with the early childhood community so that everybody's on the same page about what does it really take to get these kids ready for K. So we really appreciate that aspect of this bill and also the aspect that enables transition strategies to be developed district by district. We think that not only the tool itself, but strategies for outreach to the community and connecting those two worlds that this bill contemplates can do a lot of good. One of the most exciting examples of community-based focus on early childhood and school readiness has happened in the Minnesota Initiative Foundation's Early Childhood Initiative. And in the third year of the school readiness assessment, the department used the 17 communities that the initiative foundations have community-based work going on. And so I'd like to hand it over to Nancy Jost from the West Central Initiative Fund to talk about how they actually have used this tool to bring the community together to work on improving strategies. Unless there are any questions for me, I think.
Thank you. I think what we'll do is get to the presentations. That was your representative, Ms. Jost. Just to remind the members, we have to turn up our cell phones before we come into committee. And we also have one other person that wants to testify, so I think we'll get through the testimony and then come back and take questions. If you want to proceed, Ms. Jost, if you could welcome to the committee, if you could introduce yourself and proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. I'm Nancy Jost. I'm from West Central Initiative, which is one of the six Minnesota Initiative Foundations. We're located in Fergus Falls. And I am the Early Childhood Initiative Coordinator, as well as the Thrive Initiative Coordinator and the Early Childhood Dental Network Initiative. And they all have to do with early childhood, and hence they all have to do with school readiness. We have 10, I'll give you a little history before I actually talk about the assessments, just so you kind of have an idea where we're coming from. We have 10 early childhood initiative communities, and in a year we will be adding three more. In each community, the staff from our foundations go into the community and do a survey. It's a perception survey about early childhood. And it's about a four-page survey asking people their perceptions about what are the strengths and gaps in their community regarding early childhood. Then after we do the survey, we have a community forum in which we talk about the perceptions that came out from the surveys, and then we also have a panel of people who are involved in early childhood in the community that talk about the realities of early childhood in their community. And one of the things that kept coming up in all of the communities that we've done this so far is kindergarten readiness and transitioning. And so it is something that each of the communities has felt that they need to work on. And once they do the surveys and the community forum, then the community puts together an action plan. And so in all of their action plans, there's been something to do with kindergarten readiness. And in 2004, three of our communities took part in the state kindergarten assessment. And they found it to be very helpful. They all met and put together a plan. I think that they probably didn't have as many people working on the plan as we would have liked. There were lots of school people and early childhood people, but it wasn't as rounded as we have come to do it in the years after that. Last fall, we decided to do a regional kindergarten transition forum because all of these communities were individually working on kindergarten transition strategies, and we thought that maybe if we put together something regionally that we would have more impact. And so we put together a day-long forum in which each of the 10 Early Childhood Initiative communities was able to bring a team of 5 to 10 people, 5 to 10, 15 even, people to the forum from their communities, and people brought parents, superintendents, kindergarten teachers, early childhood people. We had a county commissioner, city council person, business person, just depended on who was able to free themselves up for the day to attend this day-long forum. We had we worked with the SEED project from the university and the Mary McAvoy lectures. We brought in Louise Stoney to talk about early childhood and financing of early childhood and the importance of early childhood and getting kids ready for school. And then we had a panel. We had someone from the Minnesota Department of Ed. We had Representative Nornes. We had a business person and a local superintendent. So people were able to ask questions of them regarding school readiness. Then after lunch, each of the teams met. We gave them this book. It's called Successful Kindergarten Transition. They also all get this booklet, which you've got, Getting School Ready in Minnesota. And each of the teams mapped out what they were doing in their community already to get kids ready for school so that they had a visual to look at. And then they talked about what they could do better, what they could do more of to get kids ready for school. Now, the one thing that was missing from this day was the kindergarten assessment. We didn't have that data because that's not been done in each of the communities. Although we were very successful in getting people to the table and getting them to put a plan together, and they're actually meeting in their local communities still on this. Some are meeting monthly and some are meeting quarterly to talk about their transition plans. It would have been really nice to have that data about how their kids in their community were actually doing. And you can find each of the communities' work plans on our website if you're interested in looking at what some of the teams decided to do. I can give you a few examples of some of the things. In the community of White Earth, they take their they bought a Reedmobile and they refurbished it, and so they take trainings out to family, friend, and neighbor providers as well as child care providers to provide one-on-one training. They bring books along, so it's kind of like a library. They're also working on doing dental varnishing when they come out with those the Reedmobile, just to help with the school readiness in that way. In another community, kindergarten teachers this spring are going to visit all the preschools, and in the fall, all the preschool teachers will be visiting the kindergarten classrooms to help that transition for children. They also do a Look What I Can Do screening event in which parents bring their kids 0 to 3 to an event where there's a supper and screening stations. And there's just many, many other things that our communities are doing. And I would like to say that the other MIFs, Minnesota Initiative Foundation, Early Childhood Initiative communities, are also doing a lot of these things. But I told you about what we were doing today just because I am more familiar with that. But those are the things, some of the things that are going on in our region. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Ephraim, if you'd like to come down and present your testimony, and then we'll move to questions. I think it's really interesting to hear about the myths and what's happening. I think, members, the debate about assessment is if we have one number, you know, 50% of kids aren't ready for school, how do you start to affect that number? And really, we almost have to, if you want to be seated, we almost have to either add an assessment at 4 and then add intervention strategies in that four-year-old year. And we have to think about what is the state's role in terms of assessments and when you do them and how you do them. Welcome to the committee. If you'd like to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. My name is Dr. Karen Efferman here on behalf of EdWatch. I would just like to renew EdWatch's concerns that I've stated multiple times before this committee about the subjectivity of the kindergarten readiness assessment, particularly Group 1, that is used to label kids as at 50% of Minnesota kids as not being ready for kindergarten. With such very subjective, difficult to measure items such as gained meaning through listening, the lack of validation for this, including by one of the people that does the assessment and that trains teachers to do the assessment, that testified to that in this very committee last year. The concern raised by Representative Eastland and others about the over-identification of boys, the fact that, yes, if you look at the, if you count the children that are in process, over 50% are not ready, but those that are truly not ready, even by the subjective assessment, is really only 10 to 12%. I think proponents of early childhood programs are way overstating the problem. And then if you look at the effects of the studies themselves on the programs themselves, we have a majority of studies, both large and small, showing no statistically significant long-term effect on academic achievement, on IQ, on graduation rates and grade retention and all of those sorts of things. And there are a significant number of studies showing academic and emotional harm from too much preschool, including things like reading scores and math scores. In states like Georgia and Oklahoma that have had universal preschool available for a number of years, they have actually shown decline in their fourth grade reading scores on the National Assessment of Educational Progress. There is research, which also relates to the bill that you just heard about, that shows that a sense of parent and family connectedness is the most important thing for children's emotional development and academic achievement. And there was another study by William James of the University of California, Long Beach, of 20,000 African American and Latino teenagers, seniors, who found that intact families and religious affiliation are the things that erase the achievement gap. That there was no achievement gap among those students. If we continue to tax families to the breaking point with $7 billion tax increases and do programs that have no evidence of long-term effect and do have evidence of harm for assessments based on assessments that are this subjective and not validated, I think we are going in the wrong direction. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like to bring Representative Peterson and Mr. Otis and see if there are questions. Member, are there questions about what's being proposed on assessments? And I think this bill is being rolled in, right, for consideration. I think it's definitely something we're going to be talking about for a long time here is assessments. And for those of you on K-12, you know we do a lot of that there. And now, obviously, the next trend is to drop that down to the stage group and do a different kind of assessment. Any questions for any of folks? Representative Winkler.
Madam Chair, Representative Peterson, wasn't your bill last year to phase in kind of a uniform assessment program over time. And so I like that better.
Representative Peterson?
Well, it was, and obviously we didn't get too far with that, and this really does allow for local control, and as we went around the state, we found that many of our districts and communities already were using some form of assessment, and we felt that working, this bill does have us working with the Department of Education, and as they put together or look at their own assessments, I think you'll find more and more commonalities around those assessments, because I think districts are looking to say, what's the best practice here, and what does work, and so it may be work sampling, it may be other kinds of tests that they use, but this does allow those districts that already have theirs in place to use those, or to get feedback from the Department of Education, and particularly, I think, noteworthy to work with those students who get free and reduced lunch, the kids at risk, to say what kinds of assessments are we using with those kinds of students.
So,
Madam Chair, I guess I think we talked about this briefly when I signed on to the bill, but we definitely seem to be in the phase in early childhood of letting 1,000 flowers bloom on programs and grants and district by district and area by area, and it seems to me that it's good to try a lot of things and see what works, but I think the challenge that the early childhood system overall is actually coming together, and so if it's just kind of it's driven by funding, I hope we can work together to at least make sure that when we have some expansion of these assessments, that it's an apples-to-apples comparison across areas so that we can get a better idea of really how kids are doing and what areas are doing well and can get a better sense of how school readiness is proceeding.
Representative Peterson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Winkler, I probably would agree, and actually my Office of Early Learning would be a great place for that to start happening, because I think you could get that kind of alignment going, the kind of discussion moving between all of the different departments, all of the discrete areas of early childhood, and to say what is most effective, what should we be doing, is it one kind of assessment or is it a variety of assessments, and so I think that's coming, but we weren't ready to go there yet.
No,
thank you. We have a couple more questions, Representative Gottwald, and then Representative Wardlow. We're going to try to finish by around 10 after, quarter after. With this
Thanks,
bill.
Madam Chair. I'll try to be brief. First of all, I want to thank Representative Winkler for his comments. I would agree. I think sometimes we get a little too broad, and it would be really good to identify best practices, things that we can actually make some traction on. Sometimes in this committee, I think we get a little caught up in the difference between our goals and our methods for achieving those goals. I think everybody wants to see our kids achieve and be ready for kindergarten. There's no doubt about that. I've heard the assessment chastised. I've heard people use the 50% proficiency, whereas I think the next group down is what? Doing pretty well. They're on their way. And so some people use that number to say we're doing pretty well already. The truth is, in a lot of cases, we are doing pretty good for preschool prep, and it's in the later years that we really end up falling off on academic achievement. And I know that's not the purvey of this committee, so I won't belabor that. One question I have is, as we look at these assessments, are they focusing on academics, or are we focusing on socio-emotional, mental health stuff? I get real concerned about us going too deep into that at such a young age, where young minds and young growth is at such a developmental stage. It's changing constantly.
Sure. Let me take Mr. Otis and then Dr. Efron.
Madam Chair and Representative, there are 5 domains of child development that are assessed, and I'll just read them to you. And they're not all academic. They're language and literacy, mathematical thinking, physical development, the arts, and personal and social development. And the kindergarten teachers are trained to look for certain attributes or skills or knowledge, and then they do make a judgment as to whether the kids are not yet in process or proficient. And you're right, there are going to be a number of kids who are in process who wind up being just fine. We're just saying that I think everybody who has children would rather have their kids be in the proficient column. So when we say about half the kids aren't fully prepared, we want a high standard for the state.
Representative Gottwald?
Yeah, sure, if I may. And I think that's a great goal, and I agree. Early childhood preparation, as I said earlier, is very important. I think sometimes the methods we use to get there are problematic. But so we are looking at mental health. We're looking at social-emotional. Mm-hmm. Could that be considered subjective?
Mr. Alder?
Madam Chair and Representative, first of all, in terms of the importance of social-emotional development, and this is anecdotal, but from kindergarten teachers that I've talked to, they say if you could pick one, make them good in that category. We can teach them the ABCs. So socially emotional development is hugely important for them to be effective little learners in kindergarten. And I think it would be interesting to hear from kindergarten teachers as a group to see whether I'm right on that. But that's what I've heard. And it's kind of basic stuff that they look for. I don't have the tool, and the department could probably give you the specific things that they're looking for, but that is really important, and things can really happen early in their lives that just have them incredibly disadvantaged socially and emotionally, because a lot of it deals with self-concept, attachment, trust, issues that deal with how they deal not only with older, you know, with the teacher, but with other kids. So I know that there are people who criticize the subjectivity of this, but the importance of the content is huge from everything I've heard.
Can we have Representative Gottwell?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just one other question. How are parents engaged when this assessment is done? Are they informed of the assessment results? Is that the goal, to bring them in? Because, I mean, that is so important, especially early in childhood, that parents and guardians be engaged in that assessment process.
Mr. Otis?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think that will vary from area to area. I think you're right that it's a huge issue. I dare say that in the Initiative Foundation communities where they did it, there was quite a bit of communication between the school districts and the parents. But I can't tell you for sure that it's universal.
Madam Chair.
Dr.
Thank you. Representative Gottwald, as you heard, two of the areas, at least, the arts and personal and social development, are non-academic, and they contain items such as gains meaning from artistic performance or shows empathy. Now, those might be nice things, but A, how do you objectively measure them? And B, if you then use those, you're saying that kids aren't ready. C, empathy is more a feminine trait than a masculine trait. So you have things like that are gonna over-identify boys. And these kinds of assessments are then used to say this kid is having a social and emotional problem, which may or may not be true, may be just the subject of the time that they assess the child. They may be having a bad day or a bad week, but yet it is now in their records that they are not empathetic or not gaining meaning through listening or whatever else it is. These are dangerous things, especially for very young children who change and develop very rapidly. And mental health experts all say, from the Surgeon General and the World Health Organization on down, that it is very hard to accurately assess a child, especially a young child, because they do grow and change so rapidly.
Representative Winkler, to that point?
Directly to the point, Madam Chair. Actually, just last Friday, less than a week ago, we went. My wife and I went and met with our son's preschool teacher in the Hopkins School District, and they used the exact same five, or whatever it was, criteria. And the teacher typed up about a page and a half of information for us based on their observations of our son, and it was a, I don't know, 25-minute conference that we had with the teacher to discuss our son, and it was a whole bunch of subjective things, but it was extremely valuable for us as parents just to see the difference between how he behaved and interacted at school versus how he behaved and interacted with us at home. And it was a marked difference. And in fact, it was those subjective kinds of qualities that the teacher was able to talk to us about that was by far the most useful. We know what he can do with, you know, writing out his name or doing things like that. That's pretty easy for us to see. But just getting that the comparison was extremely valuable. And I think the main thing that the teacher provides is seeing lots and lots of kids and lots of kids over time. And I think that their subjective evaluation is very meaningful. And I like, and there may be different ways of doing it, but I really like the idea of having teachers, whether it's at the beginning of kindergarten or in public preschool, publicly funded preschool programs through districts, being deliberate about looking through these kinds of criteria, creating an assessment, and I think it absolutely should be a conversation that they have at least with the parent to provide the information to the parent. I'm guessing in most cases that would be true, but it seems to me that we shouldn't question the validity of the effort just because we could make the change how we they're required to interact with parents or otherwise. But I think it's extremely valuable, and that it's certainly otherwise the kid just kind of goes off and you don't really know what happened. He's not a very good reporter, I know that.
Okay. Well, it's the last question, Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The comment you made about you don't know if all of them include parents in the evaluation, if you don't, then I'm voting against everything here. The parents have to be included. I mean, I would demand that. Also, one of the things that that really concerns me is, you know, if you look at the back of this pamphlet. Well, first of all, the little girl in the front, where'd you find her? She's really cute. And it says, how can kindergarten be right for me? I think looking at her eyes, that's probably more appropriate. But anyway, I got sidetracked. On the back, it's probably a picture of an intact family. And I'm thinking that what Dr. Ephraim said, you know, intact families and the ones that have some sort of church-related beliefs seem to do better. How do we catch up? What I want to know is how can we... There's a lot of families that are not intact. Mm-hmm. And those are the families I worry about. And how do we catch them up to the intact families' kids? And that's probably a good thing for the Office of Early Learning to do, to monitor that. I like the part about this bill where we're looking for best practices, and we need to find out from wherever things are working what works with these families where they're not intact, and what's working for those, and not all intact families are for poverty level. Some of them they're across the board. I mean, you've got dysfunctional families everywhere. How can we make their kids... So now that brings you back to Representative Lanning's bill, which might help, but please include the parents, and how do we catch those disadvantaged kids up to the intact family? And then why do we fall behind nationally in the later years? You know, because apparently we do fairly well comparatively in the early years, but I signed on to this bill because I think it's got some good ideas in it, and we don't want to lose sight of that.
Madam Chair, may I just tell a little story about parent involvement?
Ms. Mm-hmm. So I think we'll have you talk about that, and then I think we'll have Representative Peterson make some final comments. And
okay. In one of the communities that I work in, there's a family that the mom and dad barely graduated from high school. They have four children, and the dad never came to the school, never set foot in the school. And with the help of the early childhood professionals, the mom started coming to meetings at the school with our early childhood initiative. There was a dad's night, a dad's literacy night. The dad finally came into the school. And he is now coming with the mom to the early childhood initiative meetings. and the mom took part in our school transition forum and sat with superintendents, business people, and other leaders in the community and gave her opinion. And she would probably never have been able to do that. And so along with the kindergarten assessments and the kindergarten transitioning is a lot of nurturing of parents, because these parents had bad experiences in school. So we can't expect them just to automatically feel comfortable, but with the nurturing and helping them to feel comfortable, their kids are going to do a lot better in school than they did.
Representative Wardlow?
That's exactly what I had in mind.
Representative Peterson, final comments?
Well, just a couple of comments. And I actually did, as I've said before, work in preschool and actually taught kindergarten, so I've had some experience. It's been a few years. But even at that point in time, we were doing those assessments and actually doing them during the first 6 weeks of school. And in terms of the discussion with parents, that was vital, because you need that feedback from the parents to also get to talk with them about what you're seeing, what they're seeing. How do we talk, how do we learn about the whole child? And then how do we talk? And then we talk about what do they see is what they'd like their child to work on. What are the things that they think are the needs of that particular individual child? And then the school talks about what their goals are. So, you know, I think that goes on in every school and preschool that I know of. There might be some where they don't, but that would be, I think, very unusual. And obviously, social-emotional is a real part of that. If a child is running around and hitting other kids over the head with all day long or whatever, you know that the child has maybe some social skills they need to work on. I mean, this is not, it's things that you can observe. And I know admittance to a couple of private schools where they actually, the children have to go in and be observed, you know, for an hour or 2 hours to be able to see how they interact with other children. That is the most important piece for them. But in terms of, you know, the standardized test across the board for everybody, maybe. But it's hard. It's hard. I like the work sampling. I like the idea of using research, and these are research-based practices that we're talking about here, and the Department of Education would help with that. And I think we're starting a journey here of learning about what is the best way to assess preschoolers as well as kindergartners for the future.
Thank you. And I think that's really kind of the crux of the issue, is we're not sure what the best way is. If we're looking at the statewide assessment and wanting to make it statewide, and then, as Representative Peterson said, we're finding all these other things out there, and then how do you really determine whether kids are ready for school and what the percentage is? And if we don't know if the percentage is, if we agree with that, then how in the world as legislators do we support that? And how do we fund it if we don't know where we're at? So I think the big issue is finding out really kind of where we're at and having making sure we're using the right indicators. So it could take, I think it's really a good bill, Representative Peterson, and I think it's going to be a process over the next couple of years. But as we all know, as the pressure comes down in early childhood, we're going to need this in place. So you're kind of a little ahead of the curve, which is a good thing. And so thank you, and thank you to your testifiers for being here.
Madam Chair.
Oh, is there one? Representative Norna?
I just wanted to thank Nancy Jones for coming and being a part of this today. It's been very good to see you, and you've added a lot to our discussion. And my other question, or my question, would have been what the future is for the bill as far as where it would go, and so it'll be held over. Is that what you're planning?
It's held over for possible inclusion. And if as we know, we're going to be hearing the governor's budget next week, and so we'll see, you know, kind of what happens with that. Some of these bills you'll probably be seeing, if not this year, next year again, depending on the financial situation. Okay. Thank you. Oh, a motion. Representative Peterson renews her motion to move House File 3290 for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Omnibus Bill. Next is my bill. Representative Winkler, my testifier actually had to leave. Okay. She just walked out. So if you would like to go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Okay, and Representative Frist is going to share.
Okay. Can I have a question while you're walking up there?
Mm-hmm.
This document here got a lot of good stuff in it. I mean, it's all common sense, but there's probably families that don't have this knowledge, even though we think it's pretty basic. But Does anybody know, do schools get look at stuff like this, or GCSEs, do they look at, I mean, there's a, makes a lot of sense to pamphlet that.
Oddly enough.
I just wondering who else sees it besides us.
These are the assessments.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just curious.
Well, thank you, Representative Ward. And Representative Slawik, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Would you like to move your bill, House File 2984?
Yes, so I'd like to move House File 2984 for possible inclusion in the early childhood learning omnibus finance bill.
Yes.
Thank you.
And
so move.
All in favor? Is aye. Go ahead, Mr. Bilden.
Thank you. Just briefly to Representative Wardlow's point, I think a lot of people do see that. That's actually in a reprint, so we could, sometime we'll talk to Ready for K about that, because that's, I know they ran out of those. Today I'm lucky enough to have a bill that actually came from my school district. Now when I set my testifier, I had two testifiers. So the director of community ed for District 622 North St. Paul Maplewood and Oakdale was here and it has her advisory committee, so she had to leave. But we have pinch hitting Brian Severson Hall from Minnesota, which is the after school care software association. What this bill does, it's really kind of a small change, but it's an important change, is it takes the common practice of school-age care, which is to serve children from the summer before kindergarten to after sixth grade, and then matches it with current practice. Right now, we're not paying for that, the summer before and the summer after. We're paying for just before that, kindergarten to the end of sixth grade. So it would allow programs to serve all children and gives programs the ability to staff for children who need additional support to participate successfully. Specifically, what's important about this bill is kids with special needs, being able to get the either paraprofessionals or folks that they need to get the support to participate in the programs. So with that, I'd like to turn to my testifier and have him talk a little bit about, in practicality, what's happening now and what this bill would mean.
Welcome to the committee, Mr. Hall. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Brian Severson Hall from the Minnesota School Age Carolina. Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. It's good to be here again. Thank and would like to thank many of you familiar faces who helped with the after-school bill last year. We appreciate that. Really, this is a language change to match practice. Many of the school age care programs that are run in the K-12 system and community education. The first one started about 25 years ago, and so it was narrowly defined K through 6, meaning the first day of kindergarten through the last day of 6th grade. The good news is these are parent choice programs. Parents are signing up for them. They love them. And these services have expanded. So many of these programs, children start the summer before they enter kindergarten, start attending the program, and many of these programs kids continue on after they finish 6th grade. Especially in the summer. I would also add, since I had the chance to testify, I know the language is stating through after sixth grade, many of these programs continue on through the middle school year. So I would ask that the committee at least take a look at that also. This mainly pertains to some of the extended day disabilities levy and the ability for local districts to levy for dollars to help with the additional costs. These programs are fee-based programs. Parents pay fees to attend these programs. What the expansion of this language would do would be allow to match the practice so that kids who do have special needs can successfully attend the program. If they happen to have extra support at that program, that can be matched. So out-of-school time matches the needs of the community. We would like the statute language to match the out-of-school time practice. I guess that would be how I would summarize this. And part of what has happened is, as you can read, if you've read through the statute, one of the requirements is a partnership with the schools, with special education. And so what has happened is, as programs have partnered with early childhood special ed especially, kids are identified, are working with families, and the early childhood special ed folks help the families provide a seamless transition into school by helping them get into the after-school program during the summer before they start kindergarten. So this has been a positive benefit. It just wasn't anticipated when this first came on. So I would say those are my main statements. My last statement would be school districts, as you know, have local control, which is great. And I think if we went around the committee, we probably all would identify, well, my elementary school is kindergarten through third grade. My elementary school is kindergarten through sixth. Mine's K-8. There's a wide variety there. So I think that this statute has a chance to allow us to match what our local communities and families have decided is the need and the best practice for their community. So thank you for the chance to testify. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. And do we have any questions from the members to the testifier? Representative Gottwald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, and perhaps to Representative Flawick, why wasn't the seat implemented last year? What happened there that we didn't do that initially?
Madam Chair and Representative Gottwald, part of the problem, obviously, is a funding issue. It would be have to increase levy authority for the school districts and, taxpayers. We didn't have any increasing levy bills at all. So we were kind of universally shut out for good reasons. I mean, it's increasing revenue. So until we get to a point where we can actually do that, I think it's going to be difficult to pass this. But I think that this, it's actually happening out there. And then kids with special needs, making sure that they can get transitioned. The potential would be that some kids would not be able to do it and would be turned away if the school district wasn't able to accommodate them. So ideally, we can get up to speed in the next couple of years, we hope.
Any other questions, members? This is a testifier. If not, Representative Flawick, would you like to make some closing comments?
Well, thanks, members. I hope you'll think about your own school programs and maybe what's happening there. And in light of our earlier discussion about social skills and for kids, my kids are in after school programs, and they really, a lot happens before and after school, that kids learn a lot there too, as much as they're learning academically. And it's important to have the support that they need, to have a good environment and a nurturing environment, and then for those kids that need that little extra help, that they have that para there, that can help them out there too. So I hope in the future, Madam Chair and members, we can pass this bill and make it happen.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Okay. We're going to renew Representative Flawick's motion that House Bill 2984 be heard and laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill. And Representative Winkler is up.
Representative Winkler, would you like to move your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I would like to move House File 3246 be, laid over for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Finance Bill.
Okay, Representative Winkler makes his motion that House File 3246 be included for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Committee. I know you have a testifier that's here. I see him up there, if he wants to come down as well, this would be a good time to...
Madam Chair, I told him he had to stay there. I'm not
oh, okay. We don't get to hear from Mr. Sisterheisen.
We just had adult literacy day at the Capitol last week.
Oh, okay. All right, we'll just point him out.
Yes.
If you'd like to talk about your bill.
Madam Chair, members, I would almost consider this to be a technical cleanup type bill. There's a fiscal note attached. It essentially just changes the way we distribute the money that we have in the ABE formula this year so that the appropriation that we made last year will actually go to the programming that it was intended to go to. That changes the measurement of the growth factor to a 10-year period of measurement rather than a short-term period, because a lot of the service offerings that districts have been providing actually have been reduced. Because the contact hour reimbursement rate has gone down. But if you look at the total growth of the system, this is just a small share of what their demand is. The GED test score or test compensation amount goes from $20 to $40. The total test is still $100. Again, this is really just covering a larger share, and it's just changing the way we distribute the money. And then finally, there is a supplemental services provision of the bill, which allows 25%, I have to even look at the specific information here, but it essentially just changes the maximum amount to 25% of the total supplement services aid amount. I think the department is in support of that as well, as I've heard it today. So there isn't really a great deal here in the bill, other than just using the appropriation that we made last year more effectively. And I just have to share one story from Literacy Day last week, and that was why ABE is an early childhood program. There was parents who came up and talked about their experiences with their child. They were immigrants, English language learners, and last year, their child had got an F in math. I think it was a third or fourth grader. And the parents hadn't been too involved, and they went to start going to ABE, improving their English skills. And the following year, because they were able to help the child with their math homework, the child got an A in math. So he eliminated his own achievement gap right there. And that's through use of this ABE. And essentially, we're appropriating money to make sure the waiting list for people who are trying to learn English or get their GED are able to do so without having to wait forever to do it.
Good. Well, thank you. You know, Representative Winkler, we all received a fiscal note here. And is it cost neutral?
Yes. Madam Chair, it just changes the way the appropriation we made last year is distributed.
Okay. So that's a good thing in this kind of environment.
Indeed, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Thank you. Any questions, members? Okay. Representative Winkler, would you like to renew your motion?
I'd like to renew my motion that House File 3246 be laid over for possible inclusion in the Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill.
Okay. Representative Winkler renews his motion that House File 3246 is included in the Omnibus Early Childhood Learning Finance Bill. Thank you. Okay. And with that, members, we appreciate the timing change today. Next week, we will hear the Governor's Bill on which day? Tuesday? On Tuesday. So be looking for what the Governor is thinking about the forecast and what he has in store for our committee. So with that, this committee is adjourned.